From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for September 17th, 2021. Your playoff-bound Milwaukee Brewers are home with the Chicago Cubs this weekend. That should be fun. And the Packers hope to turn things around Monday night in Green Bay with Detroit. Let's hope that's fun. A woman in Michigan called 911 when the McDonald's she was at ran out of chicken McNuggets. People. Because of the pandemic, the health minister of New Zealand warned the locals about high-risk activities like having sex in the hospital with COVID-19 patients. You got to ask yourself, what? Here's an interesting side effect to the pandemic. Sales of large furniture are way up, especially large dining room tables. I don't have to explain that, do I? If you remember, we did a story a few months back about a politician in Namibia named Adolf Hitler. At the time, Adolf was running for public office. Well, last week he got elected. True to his campaign promise, he immediately announced he wasn't interested in world domination. Whew, that's a relief. And finally, our classified ad of the week is from Plant City, Florida. Wanted to buy playpen, cradle, high chair, also two single beds. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Kendall Bauer, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. The S&P stock composite 500 hit a record as recently as a couple weeks ago, September 2nd. We've given up ground since then, second weekly decline for the broader markets. NASDAQ shed 5.5% this week, losing 72 points to close at 15,044. The S&P closed at 4,433, losing 0.6%, shedding 26 points. Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week, not so bad, gave up 25 points, shedding 0.1%. We closed with the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 34,583. Year-to-date, still doing pretty good. NASDAQ up a nice 17.3, including dividends. S&P up a great 19.3%. And the Dow still up 14.6 year-to-date. You know, Kyle, we knew for months that the economy was going to start slowing down. It had to start slowing down. We averaged roughly 2% GDP for the last 11 years. Unlikely that we'd keep growing at over 6% as we had earlier this year. But it can be somewhat unsettling for the market. And as you recently pointed out, you know, we're still growing, but the rate of growth has slowed somewhat.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to point out, of course, is that there's a difference between recession, where growth is gone and you're actually declining, and the fact that we're still growing, just maybe growing a little more slowly. And so start there, of course. I think the other important thing for investors to remember about this whole growth story is this idea of base effect, right? That as we talk about year-over-year comparisons, we're getting into a period of time now where those comparisons aren't as bad as they had been earlier in the year. And so, you know, you talk about that base or what things were a year before when you're doing a year-over-year comparison. That base now looks a little more attractive as we get into later fall and winter, where by December and into, you know, the first quarter of this year, all of a sudden, we felt a bit more optimistic. People started to spend a bit more. The economy overall had started to pick up. That's going to make these comparison points a little more tricky. And so I think it's a much fairer comparison point than comparing to the middle of the pandemic. But certainly as we look at kind of a rate of growth that now appears to be slowing back down towards a more natural rate, or a rate that we're more typically seeing here in recent times in the U.S. economy, I think, you know, right to point out that, yeah, it's come down, but it may be a variety of factors that's causing that.
Kendall, welcome to the podcast. What's your take on current events?
So I'm getting a lot of questions on things like inflation, with the volatility we've seen in the last couple of weeks in the market, getting a lot of questions on when the next correction is going to happen. The first thing I like to point out is that I sold my crystal ball years ago, so your guess is as good as mine. But in all seriousness, the first thing I tend to point out is that it's perfectly healthy for a 10% market correction every 18 months. The second thing that I like to bring up is the time to be prepared is to always be prepared. And the way to do that is through a well-balanced, properly diversified portfolio. Keeping an eye on the allocation of stock to bonds, the right amount of growth to value, looking at the credit quality on your bonds, trying to stay short-term, high quality, and then backing up a little bit to remind clients that big picture, if you look at the last 18 to 24 months, the markets have done quite well. So I think it's important to try to avoid getting too sucked in on the day-to-day news and to sometimes pause and take a look at the big picture.
You know, Kendall, it's sometimes confusing for clients to hear that corrections can be healthy for the markets. So it's a good time as any to remind folks that, you know, what you're doing is testing support and resistance levels for stocks, and that's a good thing. You want to see, you know, at what level the stocks hold up. They're known as support levels. And at what point do stocks tend to run into resistance? You want to know that as well. And it's healthy for stocks to get reset, if you will, every now and then. So we understand truly what are support levels for the markets in the current environment and what are the resistance levels. And without corrections, you're not going to know that. And, you know, as counterintuitive as it sounds, that losing 10% of your stock money is a good thing. It is a good thing longer term because of, you know, how vitally important it is to have support and resistance levels for stocks.
And Bob, just to put that 10% in some perspective with where we are now, even a 10% correction from the prior market peak brings us back to just early April pricing in the market. Go back to any of the shows we recorded earlier in the year, and especially those weeks around early April, we were talking about how great of a start it had been to the year. And so even going back to early April pricing for the S&P, we'd still be talking about what's a pretty good year. I think we have this tendency to think about the most recent events and think that that's what's going on. And, you know, I think Kendall rightfully points out, if you put this into a broader perspective, it's been such a great run that even a little bit of a correction doesn't change the fact that it's still been a great run.
Art, let's bring you into the show. What are your current thoughts?
Well, I'll just say the same thing that Kendall said. Boy Scout motto is be prepared. I think it's important that in investing, you should always be prepared. And quite frankly, we have to expect the unexpected. We don't know what's going to happen. We're always short-term cautious and long-term optimistic or hopeful. And I do want to refer back to an article, Bob, that I think you briefly referenced there. Kyle wrote a great article that's on our website dealing with, you know, why we should be planning ahead, but why we should be excited about where we've been. I think there are a number of things that are of concern, number one of which, as Kendall pointed out, is we haven't had a 10% sell-off. We haven't had a 5% sell-off since last October. And as Kyle points out in this article, it's been 18 months since the pandemic swoon. So just expect to lose some money for a short period of time, Bob. As you indicated, it's a normal part of the process. It helps us realize where we are and helps us reset to where we're going. I think we should also be watching out for what Congress is going to do or not going to do with raising the debt ceiling. Back in 2011, when Congress failed to raise the debt ceiling, it caused quite a bit of chaos on Wall Street. Stocks dropped 19%, so stay tuned for that. COVID, the coronavirus, the Delta variant, I think at some point that's going to dissipate. And at that point, the restraint that consumers have had in planning for spending and in spending, quite frankly, could result in further spending down the road. So I'm kind of excited that at some point we may see the end of the pandemic. Seasonal concerns. It's September. As I think you guys pointed out on the show last week, September is historically the worst month for stocks. It's not October, but everybody remembers October because of the significant declines that have happened in October. So watch out for people telling you, uh-oh, you shouldn't be in the market. No, you should be in the market. You should ride right through anything. And again, as Kendall pointed out, be prepared. And inflation, it's fascinating for me to see how inflationary expectations have sort of kind of declined. We know we're going to get some inflation, but the Fed has done a pretty good job of telling us that a lot of this is transitory, and I think we'll get through that. And then tapering, one last one, since you set me up for this dissertation. My apologies for the length of it. Tapering. The Fed is going to be meeting, I think, just next week. They probably aren't going to say anything in that meeting about tapering. At least I don't think they will. But in their next meeting, they probably will. And I think the market has been very well prepared for that. But you still have to be wary of what might happen because of that.
You know, Art, when you talk about inflation, pretty interesting to see how the popular press just jumped all over that last winter, said inflation's here to stay. And yet, if you looked at the implied inflation rate with Treasury inflation protected securities, the street said something different. And now you take a look at the yield on the 10-year Treasury, a little north of 1.3, it's telling you big money doesn't see inflation coming. And oftentimes, the party out of favor will meow about inflation if they don't like how the party's in power spending money. We saw that 10 years ago. We're seeing it now. So I trust the financial markets. You know, nobody thought used car prices would go up 10% every month. Nobody thought lumber would stay tripled in price after the sawmills shut down last year. So the supply chain disruptions are wrecking havoc with pricing. You know, that'll eventually play through the markets. You know, we were talking about corrections. I just wanted to interject another thought. And this is from, you know, days of studying statistical analysis. You can flip a coin 8 times in a row and get heads. But the next time you flip, it's still 50-50 whether you get heads or tails. And it doesn't matter at all that your last 8 flips were just one side of the coin. So we talk about how a correction hasn't happened in a year and a half, and they happen normally every year and a half. I mean, that doesn't mean anything relative to whether we're going to see a correction or not. I think the main point that has to be made, that Kendall, you made fairly clearly, is that we should always be prepared for a 10% correction or so in stocks. That's just the nature of the beast. Hey, Joel, let's jump to you. You had some pretty nice reports that came out this week. Let's start with retail sales. Nice to see it heading in the right direction.
That's right, Bob. Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about how consumers drive the economy in the U.S., that 70% of the GDP comes from consumer spending. So retail sales is a good sign of that, and it was up. Analysts didn't even expect it to be up in August. Especially because in July it went down 1.8%. So it's a volatile indicator. You know, things happen month to month. You know, this month was helped more by August was helped by back to school stuff. People are still going out to bars and restaurants more so than a year ago, talking about that base effect that Kyle was talking about before. But there were also some setbacks, and I think that's what had the analysts predicting that retail spending was going down, because we had Hurricane Ida, we still have the Delta variant, as we've been referring to it. But the thing about the retail sales is that they've been up 14 months in a row. They've been past the pre-pandemic level. You know, I put little graphics out with the show notes that we have for this podcast, and this week I have one on retail sales. And as much as they just plummeted during the COVID recession, they've really shot up since then. So that is real inspiring. And we also know that consumers are still holding back. We know that they have a lot of money that they're still sitting on, and so there's hope that that's, you know, still coming forth.
Industrial production, say a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, that gets back to what you were saying before, is that, you know, we're seeing growth in the economy, but it's slowing down. The last month we have is August. Industrial production went up 0.4%, and that's compared to 0.8% in July. Now, again, the Federal Reserve, who puts those numbers out, they thought that it probably would have been closer to 0.7% instead of 0.4% because of Hurricane Ida and all of the petroleum-related businesses that had to shut down because of Ida. So we're still seeing growth there, and it was the first, that as opposed to the retail sales, this was the first month in August that we were we had industrial production above where it was, where it left off in February 2020 when we, you know, locked down everything because of the COVID virus.
And then let's switch to capacity utilization. How much of the nation's plant and equipment are currently being used? As you point out in the notes, finally above the pre-pandemic levels.
That's right, but it's also still pretty far below its longtime average. And that's an indicator, you know, getting back to inflation. That's an indicator of inflation. If that number, the capacity utilization, gets really high, if factories and mines and utilities are running out of capacity to do their business, that's going to be costly, and that's going to add to inflation. And we haven't had that for years. For you know, 13 years, I think, was the last time that we really kind of hovered around the average level of capacity utilization. And also with inflation this week, we got the number of the Consumer Price Index, which is the broadest look at inflation. And again, it was still going up, but it was the lowest monthly increase that we've had in 6-7 months. So there's another sign that we're still making progress. And as far as inflation concerns, maybe we don't have to worry so much long-term about anything really drastic happening.
You know, Kyle, as you're well aware, big money looks into the future. My guess is at this point, as we enter the confessional season for earnings, we're not going to see a whole lot of surprises. But peeking into next year, things look fairly good.
Yeah, we're talking about earnings growth in the 9 to 10% range. So for 2022, that's a pretty compelling number. Of course, you know, we're talking about this slowing rate of growth. Compare that to what we expect for full year 2021 at north of 40%. 9 or 10 is not quite as good as 40, but I'd take 9 or 10 every year from here to perpetuity. I think the one challenge we have here is that as we do enter earnings season, there's still a lot that can be learned about what businesses are doing to combat this new Delta variant, what businesses are doing to combat some supply issues they have, in particular supply of labor. You know, we talk about industrial production, capacity utilization. The reality, though, is that the labor market is a pretty big issue right now. There's a lot of concern about getting people back to work, whether that's paying people more or whether that's finding new ways to get them employed. And so I think that's going to be one of the things that shows up in a lot of earnings reports. Of course, the saving grace there may be that we're not as dependent upon labor reports anymore, especially in the manufacturing sectors as we once were. And so I think you can see pretty significant earnings growth without a ton of movement on the labor front now, as opposed to maybe 15, 20 years ago. I think, you know, pretty reasonable to expect that 9 to 10% number next year. And of course, I think most importantly, as we look longer term, that's absolutely supportive of the stock price appreciation that we've seen so far this year. And so I'm fond of pointing out that despite the fact that markets were up 7 of 8 months through the first 8 months of the year, that we're up through the end of August a little better than 20%. And, you know, as you pointed out at the open today, the S&P 500 is still up 19.3%. We haven't seen the forward price to earnings ratio increase this year. If anything, we've seen it
because of earnings.
Because of earnings. The most important piece that we could possibly see is that if the P over the price and earnings ratio, if the P is increasing, you better see that earnings piece increase as well. And that's absolutely what we're seeing. I think the forecast for it to continue to happen is a pretty good sign that we're headed down the right path. Of course, anything can happen short term, but, you know, long term, I think pretty cautiously optimistic.
Kyle, this morning you and I were taping segments for our firm's annual investment seminar. And we were talking about forward PEs, stocks being a little bit expensive. 25-year average for forward PEs, as you know, is a little over 16. We're trading a little over 21. But we were talking specifically about the dispersion of forward PEs within the market. And not just average and mean, but more specifically, that large cap growth is trading now for roughly 30 times forward earnings, and large cap value is, give or take, as of the end of August, about 16 times forward earnings.
Yeah, you mentioned your appreciation of statistics earlier, and here's a little more fun with numbers. The average PE for the S&P 500, around 22, we'll call it right now. The median PE is a little bit below 19, or a little bit above 19, rather. And so you take all the stocks in the S&P 500, you put them in order from the lowest PE to the highest PE, you pick out number 250 right in the middle. That number significantly lower than what the average PE is overall for the market. It tells you that the concentration of high price-to-earning stocks is pretty significant on that upper end, but it's a small number of names, right? It's a few of those growth names with really high PEs that have had a really good return. Reasons to believe that they'll grow their earnings significantly enough to make it worth still holding some of those stocks. But the reality is the average stock is a little bit cheaper than what we're thinking of when we think of the S&P 500 average. You can look at growth versus value and get a pretty good idea of, okay, there are places in the market that are still less expensive, if not cheap. But you can also look at a measure like the median PE to get an idea of, okay, if we just buy a stock that's right in the middle, okay, we can do a little better than what the average is. Of course, I think it takes a little more work than that. It isn't strictly about what the forward PE of a stock is. You want to make sure you're getting value however you measure it, whether that's buying an expensive stock because you think they're worth it, or whether it's buying a cheap stock because you think it's so cheap that there's no way they couldn't be worth it. And so it isn't as simple as looking at any one measure, but I think even that one measure has more nuance than what we otherwise might talk about.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.